In today's episode of Your Rivers Are Wrong, we're talking about good monster design, how function and appeal intersect, how to make a natural creature a little bit different, and how to inspire fear and wonder.
That's right. And in the prompt that I'm given, I gotta build a very creepy monster on a very creepy site around a sneaky little pond in a fort.
All that and more on this episode. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Good morning, or evening, or afternoon, whenever you may be. Welcome back to the Your Rivers Are Wrong podcast. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Dante.
And I'm the other host. My name is Marilyn.
And we're here, as we are every week, to talk about the wonderful whimsies of world building, the arts and aesthetics of setting up a setting, and telling stories born from it.
How smooth. How wonderful.
Yeah, so practiced. So practiced.
So practiced.
This is episode 77.
Woohoo!
As always, when we talk about these episodes, you don't have to watch them in order. You truly don't. I could not tell you, what to watch first, second, or third, just because I don't remember what we've already talked about.
So you can't even watch them. It's more like listen, actually. But you know.
I keep saying watch. Yeah. Sorry, it's a bad habit.
You're a videographer. What can we say?
I actually went back to edit the second episode of Your Rivers Are Wrong. Just because, you know how it goes. When people look at a podcast, they're like, let me start from the start.
Yeah.
Right? And I listen to that and I'm like, oh.
And then the first ones are absolute messes. Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit amateur, you know? Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I was listening to it and, first of all, I cut out like 4 minutes of dead time. It's like breaks.
How about that? You know, we were just maybe way more zen.
We would say, and there'd be like a 4 second break.
Nice.
And I'm like, that's
a lot.
3 seconds too long.
yep.
It's all cleaned up and tidied up. But I also would say video or watch a lot in that because I script too much for YouTube.
I mean, it's a habit. I totally get it.
Yeah. Well, to catch everybody up on this episode and this season, we're more than halfway through season 7. We're closing in on the end. We've been working, chipping away at this season for over 2 months now.
Yeah.
If you listen to the start of it, episode 71, that was recorded like right after Thanksgiving. And right now, we're more than halfway through February.
Hey-o. Are we getting better at it? Yeah, we are. Sure.
It's not a matter of being better at it. It's just that we're busy people.
You need to take your time for quality content.
That's true. It's true.
Yeah.
We are grown adults and we have grown adult responsibilities.
Okay.
You say so, my friend. Combined with a long 6th season for some of us.
Yes.
As well as work responsibilities and
laptops dying.
Lying tabs dying, replacing parts, all that nonsense.
Yeah.
But we're back. We're doing work. We're ready to go.
We've put all that behind us. Yeah.
Yeah. With what's great about so much time passing is that I've got to consume so much media in the meanwhile.
Yeah. That's how it goes, doesn't it? Yeah.
I have plenty to talk about, and one of the things I've been watching is related to the topic for today. But are there any updates before we jump in to the topic? Anything you want to inform the fans of?
Well, the fact that they can't see it. So sorry, guys, but that I have upgraded my webcam because
yes,
I had to
have.
Buy a very expensive new computer because mine died. So, you know, for all the viewers out there, which is literally one person in front of me right now.
That's
at
me.
Least I'm sharper. Hey.
You are significantly sharper.
Hooray.
To the point that I feel like your room is brighter. I don't know if that's a webcam thing, but you seem more vivid.
Yeah. Also, it's like in the middle of the day in here and it's early morning for you. So that might help. But, you know, just as a reminder.
But we always record at this time. And right. There's like a orange glow that's filling the room.
I feel like I'm just enlightened today. Maybe that's what happened.
It could be your mental peace is radiating through the webcam.
I've also started to watch Avatar. So maybe, you know, the spirit of it seeps in a little bit. Yeah.
That's fair. That just came out, the Netflix series. I haven't started on it, but I really
didn't want to because I was saving it to watch it with Cherry, but I couldn't help myself. So now I'm like 4 episodes
in. Sorry, Jay.
No.
Brutal. Cherry, if you're listening to this.
No, she'll figure out later. We're going to watch probably tonight or something. I don't know.
Are you gonna tell her you've already watched more than half the episode?
Probably, because if she hears this and she's listening to the podcast, I would feel so bad about myself. It's not going to happen.
You're perfectly safe.
We've put all that behind us by then. Mm-hmm, anyway, how about you?
I recently got to go to Vancouver. Vancouver, Canada. Ooh, Canada. Nice little weekend trip.
Have you been to Canada before?
I've been to Toronto, so the eastern side of Canada.
Right.
This is the first time I'm like West Coast Canada, which is nice. I traveled for the same reason I've been traveling for the last 3 years, to visit D&D people.
The best reason, though. Like, let's not lie about this.
To visit people that I've known online.
That's not great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's super fun. That sounds great.
I got to meet some Canadian friends, some people also on the East Coast who flew over, as well as a friend who lives in Japan. So it was really an opportunity.
They came to Canada as well?
They all came to Canada.
What?
It was a meetup spot.
Oh.
Surprisingly, like the midpoint.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, it kind of checks out. Yeah. Wow, amazing.
But it was nice. It was nice.
Oh, that sounds super fun.
There's something about knowing people only through voice call. And then finally seeing them in person, and I'm just like, yeah.
Realizing.
Yeah, that all tracks.
Yeah. It's funny, right?
You feel like a complete person now. I see it.
Yeah, because somehow, like, the sort of standard discourse about, like, you know, having online friends is that, oh, but they can be so different in real life. But it's never really the case, I feel like. Somehow, like, if you spent long enough time, that first impression is not going to lie, you know? Like, it sort of has to check out. It's really hard to be so different in real life if you spent so much time online together.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's like hours of hanging out online, more than hours. Like, you can't really hide
too much. Yeah, you can't fake all that.
Much.
Yeah, it's it would take a lot of energy. Yeah. That sounds so great. Were you there for like a weekend or what?
Yeah, just for a weekend. I think three days full. And it was fun. We didn't get to play any tabletop games there, but we didn't really need to. Because it was like, we always play TTRPGs together. We're like, why would we spend our time doing that in person? But, you know, it was a lot of fun. So
great.
That's my update. That's all I got.
Amazing.
So with that, let's jump into our topic for today, which is a topic that we have discussed probably multiple times in passing on this podcast. We've also had a whole fan prompts episode dedicated to this topic in particular, but I wanted to talk about it in long form. I wanted to talk about it in detail. Today, we're going to talk about monsters. Let's talk about monsters.
Have we never talked about monsters as an episode?
We had the fan prompts monsters episode for like Halloween.
Yeah, but...
And monsters show up a ton in our improvised prompts at the end of the episode.
I guess we've always talked about like a specific kind of monster or a genre of monsters within the general umbrella of monsters. Yeah, I guess that's right. Huh. Interesting. Yeah, that's great. We really should then by now. How did we miss it, you know?
I was brainstorming topics and then I'm like, what about monsters? What monster do I want to talk about? What about monsters?
What about monsters, you know?
We're so deep into our podcast that now I have to go to Spotify and search through our episodes to see if we've covered it.
I do that too, yeah, because I super forget everything we talk about.
I type in the topic. I'm like, have we covered this? But apparently not. So what I specifically want to focus on is monster design. Like, what makes a good monster, you know?
That's
kind of the focus here. And the reason this is brought on is because I've started a fantastic new Netflix anime series, which some of you already know what I'm talking about.
Well,
it's all the rave today.
Tell me more.
It's a manga that is highly lauded for a couple of years now that's recently been turned into an anime. It is Delicious in Dungeon, or Dungeon Meshi.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
At least at the start, it's about four adventurers trying to get to the bottom of a dungeon, searching for their fifth member. And the reason why they lost their fifth member is because by the time they reached the bottom floor or wherever they reached, they were too tired or fatigued to fight, to handle what the threats that were ahead. And the new change that they've made to their party, is that they've added a cook.
Aw, that's so wholesome. It's a great premise.
Two of the core characters are a dynamic duo of one of the main characters who really loves monsters and the second guy who really loves cooking monsters.
Mm.
And it's like the combination of their knowledge
sounds useful
on monsters in these dungeons is so, so fun. And it's such a fresh change of pace to what we're used to in these fantasy anime series where a lot of shows focus on, you know, the monster threat, how to kill the monster, their weak points, like the danger of it. Whereas these guys talk about how the monsters fit into the natural ecosystem of the dungeon and their necessity in establishing this homeostasis in the environment and, of course, their nutritional value. So it's such a, like a quirky take on the classic dungeon delve, and all the characters are so, so funny. And I love just this little slower paced journey. It feels like a continuous world building process, how they go through to each floor and discuss the ecosystem in such great detail before continuing onwards. It's very, very refreshing.
Amazing.
In that context, it got me really thinking, because I'm watching this every week and I'm like, wow, I loved that episode. Why did I love that episode? It's because they take the time to break down the monsters beyond what you'd normally need to know or expect to know. And it's so, so fun. So today I looked up articles on how exactly to make a good monster, like what constitutes a good monster. And what I found was this article by a creative artist called Sam Santala. He's worked on games like Guild Wars and a couple of Avatar and Dragon Prince adjacent games.
Nice.
And he had a talk where he discussed, this was the topic, bringing creatures to life, how to make good, emotionally appealing creature designs. And what he went into, the bullet points that he provided were really insightful in like the mindset of what goes into creating a creature from scratch and making it come to life. That's the topic for today.
That sounds so lovely, because I think there's so much linking to this, right? Like, I love the fact that you're already talking about like monsters in sort of context, because it's always just like, yeah, it's kind of what you were saying. Like, it's always just a battle. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's there to serve the sole purpose of like action, usually, or at least sort of the typical tropey way, you know. And then it can still be a very cool monster. Like, there's a lot of cool, you know, boss battles or whatever that are very well designed and are, because of that, very interesting to look at and very interesting monster design.
Mm-hmm.
But then still, like, the territory that's not too often talked about is more like the creature aspect of it, right? Like, how does it... It's you kind of sort of want to go into the sort of slice of life of a monster, right? Like, what does he do on a daily mm-hmm. basis? Like, where does he get his food? Like, is this a hunter? Like, is this a... Can this thing talk? Can it communicate? Does it have babies to care for, you know? And also in general, like, what's the relationship that you want as either the audience or as the characters with this creature? Because if it's like, okay, we're going to defeat this or hunt this or cook this, it all serves a very different...
Right.
Or, you know, talk to this, befriend this. It all serves such a different purpose. And I think it also ties back into the conversation we had a little bit earlier in another episode that I forgot what the topic was, but where we talked about like, when is something a monster and when is it a character or something?
Sure, yeah.
Do you remember this? Where it's like, when does it become a sort of enemy force of, you know, plot versus like an actual character that we want to invest in and care for and or at least hate or whatever, you know?
Like personification.
Yeah, that we need the emotional sort of value from.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting topic. And I think once you start thinking about it in an ecosystem, it becomes very blurry very quickly, which I love.
Yeah.
I love confusion in character design and creature design. Yeah.
Yeah. You've talked about a lot of really great things just now. And I'm basically going to just take that paragraph you just said and just put it into bullet points.
Step one.
Because you touched it all.
Sure,
you touched
okay.
a lot of really important great. Things. Where we're going to start is, and where the discussion started with Sam Santala, is discussing a monster's function and appeal. So function refers to how the monster services the game or the story, right? Mm. How does it speak of the world by existing?
Yeah, that's well said.
It's kind of a good foundational standpoint. It's like, if this creature exists, what does it say about, one, their immediate surroundings, and two, the greater story at large? Why is this monster here, and why is this monster here? You know, it's kind of like two different things where why is there a monster? First question. And why is there a monster here? Second question.
Yes.
Right.
My brain was like doing the mapping as you were talking. Yeah.
I was trying to say. Yeah. I was trying to say.
No, I got it.
Yeah. I'm like, no, I got to get it exactly
it's
right.
Great.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut out all the times I did it wrong, which is perfect. This is the power of editing.
Beautiful.
Power of editing.
Yes.
So to say, like, it is a common problem when running tabletop RPGs that feature monsters. I recently read a TTRPG quick start called Wilder Feast, which is a game like almost exactly in line with Dungeon Meshi in that it features large monsters and the responsibility of killing enraged monsters that have lost control of themselves and respecting the food and the sustenance that it provides you. It's a really cool game, Wilder Feast, coming out later this year. And when you have to construct a monster for a game, sometimes you could just throw in a random monster and your players will be like, yeah, let's kill it. And it's dead, right?
Attack!
And you move on.
Yeah.
But a really satisfying part of world building is putting in a monster that suits its environment. That speaks of like what is around it.
Yes.
It is a product of its ecosystem. And the players have to, one, learn about why it is how it is, and two, how to best address it. So that's what it means by function and appeal.
Yeah. I also love this so much because it immediately reminds me of the idea of like a lair, right? Like the monster in its natural territory where you're like, I'm on your turf now, which makes it instantly more scary or more, you know, humbling, whatever way the interaction's going, right? Like it can also be a very spiritual thing or something like Princess Mononoke or I don't know. But then if you are on somebody else's like home grounds, you're not just fighting or visiting or communicating with the monster, but like with the whole sort of world that is this creature's home, which is literally like an X amount more intense than just having the monster in a sort of void or in a general field, right? It's very important. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a whole book, and I'm realizing just how much I love monsters. Like the longer this podcast goes on, sorry,
we I must keep talking about monsters. I like how you said that it's such a serious. Like I've had an epiphany lately.
Because
like,
as
we
this
didn't
podcast
already
is going,
know it, you're fucking, you're like a teacher RPG player. Yeah,
I turn to every corner of my room and I'm like, oh, there's something referencing monsters here. There's literally a book, and I'm just going to confirm that I have the right book here. Yeah, there's a book that I bought. It's one of my only physical books for TTRPGs. It's not the actual game, called The Monsters Know What They're Doing. That's the name of the book.
That's a great title. What the hell?
It's by Keith Amann, A-M-M-A-N-N. And basically it takes the base monsters of the monster manual in D&D 5th edition and gives you logical, reasonable ways to run them in ways that are engaging and appealing to the players.
Oh, that's
like
dope.
How they fight, how they hide, where they eat, what they want, things like that, their motivations and stuff like that. And it's so interesting. But I wanted to kind of bounce to the next point that I wanted to bring up about monster design, which is their anatomy. I feel like the anatomy of a monster, how they're built, how they look, is super important to conveying the motifs and ideas of what they're intended to be. So, for example, the reason we call them monsters, the reason we call them monsters is that they're unnatural, is that they disturb the so-and-so natural order. They're not supposed to exist the way they do, but they do, right? And there's there's a lot of different definitions of monsters, but that's one that kind of rings true when you're speaking of these more bestial creatures. One of the tips that they offer is that if you're trying to create something that looks quote-unquote monstrous to the general audience, you want to take away pieces of them that can be found in the natural world. So the closer they are to some sort of natural analog, like a deer or a dog or a bird, the less monstrous they are. Changing core pieces of them, changing their core design from something that's more natural and slowly transitioning it to something that is strange, unusual, or unnerving is how you kind of create this more monstrous visage, what people deem as unnatural or unknown, I suppose would be the word I'm looking for here. In terms of anatomy, well, what he goes for is that when you draw these monsters, when you start sketching them and designing them, each part of the monster has to have some sort of function in its lifestyle. So we talk about naturally occurring creatures. We talk about like giraffes. Like, why are they tall? They are specifically tall to reach tall trees, to reach the fruit up there. Their height also helps with watching out for predators or staying away from things lower to the ground. Creatures that have long legs are prone to crossing natural barriers like tall brush or short rivers, right? And we can talk about eye placement. You know, the whole eyes in front predator, eyes on the sides, eyes on the sides of prey. there's a function to how you're designing them. Like, why do their eyes look like this? Their arms or legs? Why do they have a torso like this? Why are they this small, this big? Why are they colored this way, right? As a monster designer, have to add function to form. If you have like a big bulky monster on a rickety bridge, it doesn't really translate.
Yeah. Right?
It's got to be some sort of correlation between that.
Yeah. And it's kind of like dual, I guess. Like there's two sides of this, right? Because on the one hand, if you design a monster that is so well adjusted to the habitat that it's in, or optimally, you know, designed slash functioning in that space, that's kind of one side of it, which is super cool because then, as I said before, like you're not fighting a monster, but you're fighting the literal like territory, the whole ecosystem, because the monster is so much part of it. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, making friends with the ecosystem. Let's not pick sides here. Or you have the other side of this where like if you put a monster that's so not fitting to the place you find it or, you know, the bridge that it's been occupying, it also says a lot. So you can use that as a purposeful thing. Like I'm thinking like, I don't know, troll under the bridge, right? Or on the bridge. I don't know. I forgot how the trope works.
Under
the bridge. Okay. But yeah, I'm like, if he's under the bridge, you could just walk over, right? Or is he going to block your path?
He'll stop you. He'll walk up. He has stairs or something. I don't know.
Man. I'm going to go... World building podcast? Who am I? Okay.
Well, trolls can exist anywhere in proximity to the bridge, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, now. I've obviously not Lord of the Rings hard enough. Okay. Anyway, if you find a monster that's like very unadjusted, it also says a lot. It immediately gives you like a very, well, you know, it brings up a lot of questions, which is like, why is this here? And why is it not leaving here? And, you know, should we help it? Should we go away from it? The whole thing is, if you're like, this is also kind of the idea of like an alien invasion, right? That the way that trope works is it's so scary because it's so unusual to see something so monstrous or foreign or whatever, you know, design it is in an urban city or in a very normal world. And that's also, again, sort of talking about the definition of a monster, right? So it kind of goes both ways and both are very interesting, but yeah, you need to be conscious about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we actually, it reminds me of the really funny prompt we had way back when. You know, we had so many prompts on this podcast, but there's some that stick out to me and just like are a permanent memory in my brain.
Yeah.
And one of them, which is coming back just because you've brought it up, we had a prompt that was like, design a monster, a sea monster that is too big for the river it's living in.
Oh, yeah. That was a dorky one. Yeah, I remember that one.
It's just like...
So dumb, right? Yeah.
I mean, but it's a perfect prompt. It's exactly what you were saying. Like, this creature is here. The
why on earth is it here?
Ask is why, right?
Yeah. Why would it do it to itself? Yeah.
It clearly wouldn't be here by choice.
And it's funny because it instantly like creates, like, jokes aside, it instantly like creates the feeling of, oh, poor monster, you know?
Yes,
like
exactly.
The connection is almost by the way of building it is almost like inherently there, which is interesting as well. Like, yeah, there's a lot to it.
The question of why is so prevalent once you get past like the stat block that's usually attached to these monsters. Mm. Like, why is it here, right? I've recently actually had the opportunity to start running more games for a couple of people I know, which is nice because I haven't really run games for my friends in a while. I've been a player for like a little over a year now.
Right.
And I'm a huge fan of these like mega dungeon, room connecting to room connecting to room kind of things where players slowly explore more and more. And this is my third time going for like a mega dungeon-esque style of game. And as I'm placing every single monster, I'm like, why are you here? How'd you get here? Why is there a bear underground?
In a dungeon.
In a dungeon. Like, why are you? So like every time I place on a monster, I like kind of have to pull back from the screen, just sit there. And I'm like, why are you here? Did someone put you here? Did you find your way here? Do you like it? You know, that kind of question.
Are you happy?
Are you happy? Yeah, it's so important. When you have the players that I'm running for, there's so much why. You know, there's so much why. It's never like we've been playing for long enough that it's just like, I know exactly what this monster does. Why here, though?
You know? So what other question should I ask here? Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's also inherent to improvising, right? Like, I feel like that's kind of part of the deal. Yeah.
Like, I've thought about why is the bear in a subway more times this month than I've ever thought I would. You know, than I've ever thought I would.
Can you please tell me the answer? Why was the bear at the subway?
No, the players don't know yet.
Oh, dang it. You're just going to leave me hanging? Ugh,
it's not because I don't know. There was a window in time Google. Where the answer was, I don't know.
Sure.
But now
it always ends. Answer, you know, it always
in
starts.
In classic Game Master fashion, now the answer is, I know now. I didn't know before, but now the players have to figure it out.
Okay. I was gonna ask before, like, is it the fascination with mega dungeons that it sort of all adds up to, like, you're slowly finding puzzles to the big sort of, well, either reveal or like end, like literal
yes.
end of the tunnel, or, you know, figuring out why the system is there, or is that
yeah.
part of it? Because I'm not that hardcore of a dungeon person, but that part I do find very interesting.
Yeah, the why is so crucial.
Because it's so like literal tunnel vision, like you can only go one room at a time, right? So you literally are not able to see the full picture.
A lot of running Dungeons and Dragons in particular is having these massive dungeons and then asking yourself, why did someone go through all this trouble to make it? Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why
yeah.
why did they put 20 rooms next to each other, exactly 50 feet by 50 feet next to each other, for no purpose except to house monsters that people are going to be fighting? Like, what is the purpose of that, right?
Yeah.
What is the function? Why does this exist? What? Why are the players going through this and not
yes.
just leaving to do something more satisfying, right? So the why is so, so interesting. And mm-hmm. as I continue to build these rooms and have them traverse through it, it's so satisfying for them to see something and be like, why is that there? That's weird. That was also in the room previous. Why is this monster like this?
Yeah.
Didn't we kill this monster already? Why is it back? You know, those
connecting
kind of things.
Those dots.
It's very fun. It's very fun. Before we go off too far off the rails, I do want to attach this last thing that I feel like we've already been talking about.
Ah.
Or maybe 2 points. We'll find out. The final real bullet point I have here is that it should inspire fear or wonder.
Mm.
I think a core tenet of monsters is the visceral reaction people have to seeing them.
The whoa.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Like the difference between like...
It's part of the deal.
Yeah. The difference between like cats, dogs, and birds. Not that people don't have wonderful reactions to those.
The internet is full of them, in fact. Yes.
And monsters is that they inspire these very strong visceral feelings that make you want to act a certain way.
Yeah. Very prehistoric. Yeah. Human versus the world.
Very carnal. Very strong.
Yeah. Very primal. Instincts. That's kind of what you want, right?
Yeah. 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 And it's like... Do they think of it as baby or do they think of it as threat? You know, it's kind of like you gotta really hedge your bets.
Yeah, it's true. But it's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Like when it comes to writing stories, when it comes to running games for people, right? The goal is for a story to happen. And monsters are yet another tool for that story to move forward, to progress, to instill foundations of the world. And the real fantastic part about monsters is that they interact with you. It's not just a statue. It's not just the sky or a riverbank.
Yeah, it's not a trace.
Yeah, these things will respond in kind to however you react to them. It's a very interactive part of the world and very, very core to lots of fantasy fiction.
Well said.
Yeah.
There's a reason that monsters are so present in a lot of media we consume, I think. And it's literally the past half hour we talked about. Yes. Great topic. And important, too. You got to set like the grounds before you can dig into the mermaids and the you know, the krakens and everything.
Right, right.
Yeah. Lovely.
With that said, I do want to jump into the prompt for today.
Yep.
Which you will be helping me with.
Knew it was Kevin.
So what I want to do for our prompt for today is offer you a randomly generated location.
Ooh, I like this already. This is great.
And what you're going to do is create for me a monster that lives there.
Yes.
How's that?
Oh, I love this so much. Let's go.
I'm just going to randomly generate a couple things.
Are you on like a fantasy generator?
That's I literally looked up fantasy location generator.
Nice, love it.
That is exactly what I've done here.
Big tip out there for all of the world building peeps.
Random generators are my bread and butter.
When in doubt, you know, let the internet decide for you.
Oh, I've found creepy site generator. Let's do that.
Creepy site generator. Wow.
Yeah. Here we go.
Give it to me.
Okay, so here is your prompt for today.
Yes.
Again, generate a monster from this environment specifically. I feel like this could be a whole episode, but we'll do this as a prompt.
We'll do like a special maybe once, sure.
According to the creepy site generator, this is your location.
Give me that creepy site.
It's a pond located out in the brushland. It's been there since as long as anyone can remember. It's reported that those who visit it eventually begin behaving in strange and erratic ways. A scientist who went to visit it a long time ago vanished without a trace. So I'm going to chuck that in a place you can read.
Yeah.
Because it's quite a bit.
I like it, though. It's very nice. It's very like just giving you enough, right? Without giving too much, because that's a hard balance.
I'll leave it to you.
Brushland. What does that mean?
What is a brushland?
I know what a brush is.
Google.
And I know what's land. Brushland? I'm envisioning like sort of tundra, but like warmer.
Yes.
But that feels like
exactly
it should just
it
be
is.
A forest. Oh, okay. Like
so
low,
it looks like, yeah, low.
Low growing vegetation kind of stuff.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Maybe not as dry as other places, but.
Okay. Yeah, this is great. I already got a sort of vision there. So we're talking, just for clarification, this prompt is a monster that is sort of present in this environment, right? That we just generated.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So picture the following.
I'm ready. I'm picturing already.
You're the like ambient in the background? Yeah. This is a very quiet place. This is like a little bit shielded. There's not, you can't look out too far from here. Not because it's like a giant forest, but because it's quite dark and a bit foggy, moody because of the humidity in the air here.
Mm.
Somehow the brush around here is very dense, as if it either needs to hold as much moisture or it almost looks like an environment that is plagued by storms or something, right? Where only the toughest vegetation stays aground.
Right, right.
Almost in like a sort of dune type of way, or beach type of way, I should say. And among the brush, amongst the still relatively luscious greenery and, I mean, more gray tones than green, I would imagine, but there can be found a small pond. And strangely enough, it's very beautiful and quiet here. Like if you wouldn't know about this place, you would easily go sit here or use this as part of your walking route if it's close enough to cities or bigger places, because it's very quiet and, you know, you can kind of come to yourself in this area. You hear a lot of insects buzzing. There's this sort of strange dripping sound of either water trickling or like something like that. And the pond here that is sort of only slightly visible behind like thick leaves and stuff.
Sure.
One would almost describe it as ink-like. It's very black for some reason. Everything else seems the same. It seems very similar to how any other sort of small natural body of water would form or would stand still. It smells the same way. It's a little like there's probably some algae in there. If you would come really close to the surface, you could almost see a little bit through it and see some sort of clouds of fog whenever an insect or a small animal in there moves a little bit. And every now and then you see like the small, I'm thinking, what's the word for this? Wait, I gotta pause. I gotta look this up. This is such a Dutch word. I've never... Okay, let me... I will tell you the Dutch word and you will find it very funny, I think. It's called kikkerdril.
Yeah.
Spawn? Like toad spawn? Does that make sense?
Toad spawn?
It's like the tiny little animal / fishies that are like growing out into like frogs.
Tadpole.
Tadpoles. That's the right one. Okay.
How do you say it in Dutch?
Kikkerdril. Kikker means
frog?
Toad or frog.
Oh, okay.
And drill means, I don't know what drill means. It means like the jiggly sort of putting substance that it sometimes has.
Yeah.
Anyway, back into the scene. You could even see like these clouds of tadpoles, as you were saying, sort of drift by or sort of sit around the edges of this. This is a very like, there's probably a lot of life in there, but it's hard to see because it's just so black, right? It's just so inky and viscous, I would almost say. The sound doesn't really prepare you for whatever you see when you're here for longer than probably 10 minutes or something, looking like peering under the surface. As small as this pond is, like it's not a lake, you know, it's a small place. It's very shielded and, you know, there's not a lot of water flow. It's very, sure, yeah. You know, it's very small. But as small as it is, Every now and then, a sort of strange, iridescent shadow glides just under the surface of this pond from either a large piece of hide or a strange sort of fish passing by. It almost looks like a sort of soap bubble at times. But every now and then you see almost, I would say, whale-like, a ginormous beak sort of travel almost like a sieve through the water, where this whole monster or creature, whatever it is, it's hard to see, sieves through the entirety of this, just under the surface of this viscous water, and takes everything that's in its wake, sort of, you know, basically eats it or something. It's not really sure, but after, like, the pond seems to be almost clear for like a second. And then a moment later, just as this sort of iridescent sheen glides over, drifts over, the pond seems to, in an instant, almost sort of lose the transparency in there and just become that weird black inkiness again. And I think if you would be there long enough, you might even feel a little bit strangely pulled into that surface. Like, it's very aesthetically beautiful to see the sort of blackness of it fade away, turn into rainbow mirror-like structures, clear up. And, you know, it's unlike anything you would ever see, right? And it's very tempting to just try to clear the water and try to see what's under there and see what's going on. And only few people have done so, one of which was in fact a scientist that made a lot of fuss about going there and figuring it out. Been a few years since anyone has ever heard of him. But as you would traverse into this pond and see, or try to figure out the same way the scientist tried to figure out, maybe step into the water, touch the surface, see if it feels like water, you would realize it's not water at all. It has a weird sort of balloon-like substance. And once you touch this water, there's not only like a weird sort of ripple flowing through it, but you see that the whole thing sort of comes up a little bit, and it's not a pond, but it's almost a sort of second large mouth that you're suddenly very, very trapped in. And not a moment later, almost as a sort of Venus flytrap, this whole sort of surface of the water sort of folds in, almost like, how would you call this? Like, you know, when sometimes you have a sort of vortex in a water, when there's like a lot of water flow.
Yes,
you instantly sort of get folded into this weird sort of tarry-like surface or whatever it is, skin, I don't know, insides of something, and are gone before you know it. And the pond sort of flips into itself, closes up, and there's barely any sign of a pond left. There's no sound that would ever show that you were there. The vegetation is making the same noises as ever. And I think in a day or two, the pond would slowly start to open up again and show some beautiful, interesting features right under the surface, ready to explore. And no one has ever heard of you again. Creepy sight.
Love it.
End
love
scene.
It. Nice. You know, what do you call it? That reminded me when you were saying like the water kind of closes in on them. Have you ever seen those videos where someone's like out in the ocean and a big wave is coming up and like conversely the ocean sinks beneath it? So like,
oh, because of like the amount of water that's going up?
Going up.
Weird, right? Yeah.
So like immediately you're dragged downwards while the water's pulled upwards. It's just like the most
super
menacing
freaky
thing.
Yeah. The sea is so scary, dude. Yeah.
It feels like the pages of a book just kind of like appearing beneath you and snapping shut. It's so spooky.
It's freaky as hell, which makes great monster design.
Yeah.
I also didn't realize the pond would be the monster until like halfway in. And I was like, maybe a fish is not enough. I'm going bigger.
I was curious where you were going with that, but it was good. I liked it. Great. I think the visual of a pond folding in half to swallow somebody.
That's wild.
Is certainly an image. I love that.
I like that the site was also a pond. Like usually it's either very grand or very like luscious, but a pond is kind of subtle, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. I love this prompt. This is great.
Yeah. Well, if you guys ever want to create monsters, get into world building. Get into running games. Golly, there's a whole lot of world to build.
CreepySite.com.
Creepy site generator. It's not .com, but I'm sure you could find it.
There's plenty out there. Yeah.
And recommendations for this day, for this episode, check out Dungeon Meshy, Delicious in Dungeon.
Yeah, that sounds so good. I'm definitely going to, you should send that to me. Because, it sounds fun.
I can't recommend it to a lot of my friends because they're not really in the headspace that I'm in a lot.
What does that mean?
As in, like, you know, people who
they're not
just
chill
like
enough for it. They just want to watch battles
or dramas or like okay. action. Like, it's not really that, but
it's a specific genre.
Like that
I guess.
Stuff,
yeah.
Oh, it hits the spot. So well.
Nice.
That's all for this episode.
Aww.
Exciting stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you ever want to reach out to us, check us out at yourriversarewrong@gmail.com.
Yes.
We had an email earlier this week from Greg, listener from the show, who told me that he did indeed recognize the obscure manga that I mentioned like two episodes ago.
Amazing. This is the kind of fandom we want. I love
and
that.
I'm like,
you.
Wow. That's a 20-year-old deep cut that I didn't expect anybody to point
Yay.
Out. So anyway, reach out to us there. And of course, as you world build and story tell, always remember one thing that is true for every story and every tale you tell from the past, present, or future. And when every monster you ever speak of, let it be known that right beside it, rippling right along. how do I end this?
I mean, you dug this yourself, man.
In every setting, in every world, your rivers are wrong. See you next time.
We got there.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Rivers Are Wrong. If you have ideas for topics, prompts, or you just want to share your thoughts, please reach us at yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. That's yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. Also, a big thanks to Maarte Schellekens, who created the intro and outro music for our podcast. And most importantly, thank you for listening. We hope to see you at the next one. Bye.